All right, welcome. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Adam, and it's Wednesday, the 7th of August, 2019. And listeners can go to my website, krazfiles.com, C-R-A-Z-Z, krazfiles.com. Everything's up there. Welcome to the members as well. Hope they are enjoying all the great podcasts we're putting out here and all the great info there. You can become a member on my website now, of course. So all the info's up there for you to have a look at. Please enjoy. We always, as always, we've got so much to go through, and no exception tonight. Author, researcher John Hammer is plugging in with me tonight for a great podcast just to talk about his new book. But it's the same day. It's actually Wednesday for you, John. Wednesday morning around 10:40. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks, Adam. How are you?
All right. We had a great podcast about your Titanic work. And I wanted to plug in with you to talk about your new book on JFK. So this is a very British coup, The Definitive Truth of the Assassination of JFK. So is this your latest book? You're working, this is the one that you've got out recently?
Yeah, this was published in about March or early April. But I actually have two others on the go right now. One of which is called The Falsification of Science, which is a sister volume to my Falsification of History, which I published about 7 years ago. And also I'm writing a book with a friend in America who on the 5G and how that connects into the transhumanism agenda, you know, the 5G agenda, which, as we know, is coming along very, very soon, and all the problems that's likely to bring to us all.
Oh, my boy. It never ends. Well, you're certainly not going to run out of material in today's world, are you? That will be fantastic. And we're going to... I'll just mention your website, of course, the Falsification of History. .co.uk. That's your book, actually, I'm reading now, but your website is, of course, The Falsification of History. .co.uk. Yeah, so if people want to click on there, there's a wealth of information. All your book info is up there as well for folks. I got your JFK, A Very British Coup. Straight away it stood out for me, and I'm into that now, quite a way in on my Kindle. We were just talking before we started. I don't know where to go with this because you've written a shorter book, but it's the information in here is just mind-boggling. It really is. And, of course, I knew a lot of this, and I try to study a lot of this, especially in regards to the banking and real history. It's fascinating. I've done shows on Kennedy. I did one with Don Fox on the Kennedy assassination. I've read a lot of material. I've looked at videos, everything, but I haven't picked up anything like this, John. And it's really, really fascinating stuff. I was reading about Joe Kennedy as well, and his life with the booze and the Kennedy family. It's like an incredible movie, you know, when you're reading this book, but it's real life. It's absolutely fascinating. And the whole first section of this book, of course, when I started reading it, and you were talking about the money and maritime law and the British Crown and who runs who and all this system and who really controls the United States and everything. And it just blew me away because it's not something I originally thought about. And you talk about the Jesuits and the Vatican and the money, that the incredible amount of wealth these people have. But this is really astonishing stuff, and I think it's maybe people just because the Kennedy assassination in itself, with him getting his head blown off in front of the whole planet, I mean, that sticks in history, and that's what's in everyone's minds. And they think, yeah, oh, there's conspiracy theories around it, and the, you know, who shot him and all this and blah, blah. One looks at the building blocks here, and that's what you've done in the book. You have to really go back in history and go through all of this before you even get to the assassination itself. And in your book, when you kind of get to the assassination, or you don't really need to, you can work out why it was done, because you go into great detail. I loved your sections there on Gaddafi and you know, Saddam Hussein, and this is how they get rid of people as well. But all we can do with such a dense book like this, it's, you know, there's so much information, and we can just go through sections and the bullet points for folks and try and promote it and hope they will go and get the get the editions. I got the Kindle, and there's the paperback as well. So I'll put all that information up. I guess we could talk to you a little bit about this British crown, because I found this fascinating, this control within London, this kind of system within itself that answers to nobody. Why don't we start there and build?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to sort of reiterate what you were saying about the book and how it's structured, I mean, I had to... I started off just writing about the assassination, and then I realized that, well, I need to put a little bit of background in and how all this came about. And it just went sort of backwards from there, in effect. And eventually you realize that it's just another one of the jigsaw puzzle pieces in the grand chessboard, you know, the big conspiracy picture, if you like, for want of a better phrase. And I mean, it started off as just being, as I say, about the assassination, but then you realize that actually the preamble to the assassination is far more complex than it's ever given any credence for, you know. And as you say, the Crown Empire is the starting point for that. The British Crown Empire, for those people who are not familiar with the term, or the British Crown, as it's often called, people think that that is somehow related to the monarchy. Well, it is related to the monarchy, but it's not actually the monarchy itself. What the British Crown means, it's an organisation that is, it incorporates the monarchy in there, but it's really a big umbrella organisation that actually, you know, let's not beat about the bush here, it actually rules the world, okay? So basically, I believe that the world is ruled from London, from the city of London, which is the heart of the what we call the Crown Empire. The city of London is a separate entity, very much like Washington DC is in the States. Washington DC is the headquarters of the military empire, and the Vatican in Italy, that's the headquarters of the religious empire. Well, the city of London, which is a separate city state just like those other two, is the headquarters of the financial world. It's just one square mile in area in the heart of the city of London, but it's actually called the City of London as distinct from London itself. It's called the City, and it contains things like the Bank of England, Lloyd's of London, which is the biggest insurer in the world. It's got all the British Stock Exchange there, the head offices of 385 banks, most of the UK newspapers, Freemasonry, the whole entire legal apparatus of the whole world is situated in the City of London, and that consists of the four Inns of Court, as they're called. And it's actually tax exempt as well, is the City of London, and the amount of money that passes through it and it deals with on a daily basis is just mind-blowing. It's just staggering. People wouldn't believe the amounts of money that are involved there.
Yeah, that's right. Where's this area exactly, John, in the City of London that we're talking
about?
It's
just slightly to the east of the city centre. Incorporates, for those who know London, incorporates where the Tower of London is and all the and the Bank of England. And that area, which is, as I say, just slightly to the east of the actual city itself, but it's also on the banks of the River Thames as well. So it is literally in the heart of the London itself, but it is just slightly to the east, and it's a very distinct area. It has its own Lord Mayor, for example. It's got its own police force. It's just a totally separate entity, and it's not subject to UK law either. It has its own laws. For example, when the Queen visits the city, you know, for ceremonial occasions or whatever, she has to wait at the Temple Bar, which is the ancient entrance to that city, and has to be greeted by the Lord Mayor of the city, and she bows to him because she is subservient to him. And that, just to me, is a demonstration of how powerful that entity is, the Crown Empire, which is situated within that City of London, and which is, you know, it's the entity that basically controls the world finances and much of everything else as well.
Yeah, and the the British monarchy and all of this with your royals and queen and you just mentioned. Is this kind of set up as, I mean, do these people, are they just parts of the puzzle here? Do they have that much power, or is it more kind of set up as a distraction for the public to sort of suck them in and keep the whole world looking in their direction as all the drama of the royals come out? But the power always, to me, seems like it was beyond them in that part of the
Yeah,
world.
a bit of the answer to that, Adam, is it's a bit of both. Yeah, I mean they are figureheads in a sense. They're there as a distraction, as you also say, but they are very powerful nevertheless. They do, they do have a big. I'm not saying they're the ultimate power because they ain't, but they do have a lot of intrinsic power themselves. For example, that I firmly, it's getting off the topic a little bit, but I believe it was the royals that were behind the assassination of Diana, for example, and not just me. A lot of people believe that as well. And there's a lot of evidence to back that up as well. So yes, they do have power in their own right. They're not just purely figureheads, but they don't own the ultimate power. As that's the big money men like the Rothschilds, and in the States, the Rockefellers. They're the prime movers. Really, within the whole thing, but everything is, it's so difficult to get across in such a short program, but everything is intrinsically connected back to that Crown Empire. For example, you mentioned briefly in the introduction about the States, United States, and how that was, I'll just expand on it a little bit, that was actually ostensibly made independent in the American War of Independence, but that never actually happened. Obviously, the War of Independence happened. I don't mean that. What I mean was that they were never made independent. It was just a front. It was, in fact, it was five Temple Bar attorneys, and Temple Bar is the legal headquarters. It was five Temple Bar attorneys that actually signed the American Declaration of Independence. So you can see that. That it never really happened as we're told it happened. It was just a front to give the impression that America is independent from Britain, and it certainly isn't. Obviously, it's a little bit more independent than say Australia, New Zealand, Canada is, because they're part of the so-called Commonwealth. But the States, nevertheless, is very much driven by the UK, and this is how the Kennedy story starts, because it's the Crown Empire that controls almost everything that goes on, and they have intrinsic links into, things like the FBI, the CIA, the Mafia, the Catholic Church, which is very powerful in the States as well. All these institutions, Israel, of course, the massive links to Israel and what's going on there. And they obviously run a lot of the industry as well, especially things like big oil, and obviously the monetary system, the Federal Reserve as well. That's all linked back to the Crown in the City of London. So, despite, well, I suppose what I'm trying to say is, despite the appearance of America being totally independent, it's not. It's governed by the Crown Empire, and this is where the story of the assassination starts, because Kennedy was. Shall we say? Well, what happened was in late 1961, JFK's father Joe, who had previously controlled both his sons, John and Bobby, with an iron fist, really. I mean, he actually really, really controlled them and kept them in check and made sure they didn't upset anyone. Well, in 1960, well, late 1961, Joe had a serious stroke. And it absolutely devastated him, and he never spoke again. And he died shortly afterwards, a few years afterwards. But at that point, he lost control of his sons, and that's when they started, shall we say, getting a little bit out of hand and rattling people and organizations' cages that maybe they shouldn't have done. And so it was this action that they did, that they took in various areas, which upset a lot of different institutions, and all these institutions linked back into the Crown. So the impetus for the assassination came from the British Crown, and really that's what the book's about. And as you rightly say, it's an extremely convoluted story, far too complicated to actually do it justice in a program such as this, unfortunately. But we can talk around the edges of it.
Of course, and promote the book. That's what it's about. No, we'd be here for months, I feel. Talking about the crown, you had some figures in your book, just in regards to you were illustrating the amount of money, you know, trillions that are going through here, and you can't fathom this, can you? The amount of money going through there, and the control, I guess. Yeah, you're talking about, you know, the military, and I guess you'd be talking about NATO, and then you start to get that picture in your book that when people don't do what these people want in the way that they want, they just get rid of them. And that's gone through history, hasn't it? But illustrate that a little bit, the kind of amount of money that we're talking about here from the Crown and their banks and all of this. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a little bit from my own personal experience. Not that amount of money, you understand. In the 90s, I worked in the IT industry. I was a software consultant for not a large firm, but a medium-sized firm. And we won a contract with the City of London, with the City of London Corporation, which is the council, if you like, that runs the City of London, to update all their accounting software. And it was a very lucrative contract, several millions. And we did all the initial testing and all that. And then sort of partway through the initial testing phase, but obviously before it went live, we hit a problem. And the problem was that our software only went up to, only had fields of 9 digits for monetary amounts. Okay, so what's 9 digits? Is that, that's a billion, isn't it? It's a, Or is it? No, it goes up to 10 billion, doesn't it? 9 digits. So yeah, you could account for sums of up to £10 billion or whatever currency you wanted in that software, which we'd never had a problem before. That was always totally adequate, you know, for one single transaction, the maximum of 10 billion. But no, the City of London came to us and said, look, we've got a problem here. These fields are not big enough. We need fields of 14 digits. Okay, and so we're like, you know, okay, 14 digits, right. Well, just to put that in perspective, that is 100 trillion. Okay, so they needed to account for sums of £100 trillion. Now, I think in the book there's an illustration of what $1 trillion looks like, $1 trillion looks like, and again, I can't describe to you, you know, over the air what it looks like. But, you know, if anyone does buy my book, they will see what a depiction of $1 trillion looks like. And it's absolutely mind-blowing.
Stacked on pallets.
Stacked on pallets that stretch for hundreds of yards. You know, I think the depiction is of the White House and all these pallets double-stacked with pallet full of $100 bills, not $1 bills. So, you know, it just goes on forever, this depiction. And really, it's so difficult for people to get their heads around what 1 trillion means, because you sort of lump it together with a million and a billion, don't you? But it's much, 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 much bigger than that kind of sum. And so I did that to actually illustrate to people exactly the kind of figures that we're talking about. And that was only 1 trillion, and we were talking about 100 times that. So it's just literally mind blowing. And I think that it just illustrates that we don't really know what goes on in the background and how much money is being moved about and what it's being used for and all the rest of it. It's staggering, utterly staggering.
Yeah, it is. And talk a little bit, John, about the Federal Reserve and the connections with the Rothschild empire. We know that so well. We hear about it all the time. How's this connected with the Crown? And have you got a scope of, was this around World War II time? I mean, it all seemed to be planned as well. you've got a sort of scope of this connection, and because we, and maybe talk a little bit about the Zionist sort of movement. We hear about the whole Jewish thing and with the Rothschilds and all this, but the state of Israel, the creation of it. This whole connection is very interesting, especially when you're throwing in the Vatican as well. People are like, who, what, what? You got the Rothschilds, America, the British Crown, the Vatican. Where, who, what's going on? but it's all interconnected in such an incredible way, and it's done through money.
Yeah, how long have we got, did you say? Sorry. Yeah, I mean, this is a big topic, you're right. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Rothschilds are Jewish, and they're all connected to Israel. I mean, some people say that Israel is the land of the Rothschilds, and I would tend to agree with that. I mean, Israel is an artificially created state, as you rightly said, after World War II, and it was created in order to make a base in the Middle East for waging war, which is what they have done in the past. But that's sort of getting off the topic slightly, but it is all intrinsically connected, as you say. I mean, the Rothschilds were the original founders of most European central banks, but they do control them all now. The reason I said most and not all is because the original European Central Bank was the Bank of Amsterdam in Holland, and that wasn't formed by the Rothschilds. That was pre-Rothschild days, but eventually they did take that over. But yes, the Bank of England is Rothschild-owned. All the central banks in the world are Rothschild-owned now, and including the Federal Reserve, and that's why they're all connected through that Rothschild connection. For anyone who's listening who doesn't understand what a central bank is the organization within any country that is responsible for the creation of money. And that is absolutely done fraudulently. They just create it out of thin air. They loan it to the government at interest. And that's why we have these huge national debts, because the interest is so vast that it's unpayable. And it's a vicious cycle, because the only way that you can pay back that interest is to print more money, which also comes with its interest added. And so therefore, that's why national debts just keep on going through the roof, and it's all owed to the Rothschild family. Yeah, what else can I tell you about it?
Yeah, it's incredible, and I was going to also ask you to tie in a little bit, just an explanation, because I know we're under this as well. You're just mentioning in your book about maritime law. Could you just sort of cover the basic points of maritime law and what that means for countries like Australia and because we really do seem like a corporation. I think our politicians, everybody's starting to see that they're just puppets up there, but they don't really run anything. But maritime law is an important subject that you do cover in the book.
It is. Yeah, well, basically what the situation is regarding that is that we have to go back to the Magna Carta in England in the year 1215, when it was signed by King John, and which took away his power. Okay, bear with me on this. I know it sounds a bit as though we're going back a long time, and we obviously are. But yeah, the Magna Carta took away King John's absolute power to do anything he wanted, and it brought a little bit of power back to the people. And part of that Magna Carta was the issue of what's called common law now, and that cannot be usurped. Common law is the only only lawful law, if that makes sense. Okay, and we need to distinguish between lawful and legal here, because lawful is pertaining to common law, which is the only law, and legal refers to maritime law, which again I'll come on to very shortly. Okay, so common law simply states that you shall do no harm to anyone, or by inaction cause harm to befall anyone. And that's it. That's the entirety of the law, and that's what the law should be. Obviously, with various penalties for, you know, however you break that edict, if you like. But that should be the whole of the law. That is what's called common law. Okay, so how the powers that be got around this little conundrum, because they can't do away with the Magna Carta and common law. It's deeply embedded into society, and they can't do anything about it. So what they've done, they've bypassed it instead, and they use what's called maritime law. Now, maritime law is the law that we operate under, and it consists of not laws. They call them laws, but they're not laws. They're actually statutes, and they're what we think of as laws, such as, you know, any other law you can think of that is pertaining to any particular country is not a law, it's a statute. And it's that those statutes that are maritime law. And for example, maritime law is noted in courts, I know in the UK and in the US, I'm not sure about Australia, by a gold fringe around the flag in the court. So... Mm. And it's the same on military uniforms as well. The country's flag on the sleeve of the military uniforms has a gold or a yellow fringe around it, and that means that they're operating under maritime law and not common law, not the law of the land, which is common law, the law of the land. It's actually maritime law. And this is what gives them the power to do basically whatever they want with the laws, because, you know, they're not governed by the constructs of common law. So it's in a very small nutshell. I mean, that's obviously another very wide topic that I would advise people, if they're interested in looking that any deeper, to actually Google that or use whatever search engine is your preference. And because there's a lot of stuff out there on the internet about it, and it's all, you know, it's all very interesting, and it's all true, of course, as well. You know, and as you sort of alluded to as well, countries are not countries as we think of them as the private corporations run by shareholders, stockholders, you know. So it's, again, it's all part of that same thing.
It's I've got highlights galore in this book. I just have a little section here. I'll read it out. Our names, when spelt in all capital letters, e.g. John Smith, represent a fictitious corporation or a trust created in our name by the government through the Treasury Department at our births. So then we get our birth certificate. Each and every time a child is born, a new corporate trust is generated using our names in all capital letters in order to maintain control of our lives. They must do this because all governments are corporations, and they can legally operate only under commercial law, the law of contracts. So this is what you're talking about here. Yes. Could you talk a little bit about this, John, at birth and the birth certificate and what you're talking about here in this book? We are under contract. Yeah. I mean, this is a little bit frightening for people when they see this stuff. A lot of people are getting into this now, but you just see it everywhere, you know. It's just so crazy to think that you feel like you're not bringing a human being into the world. You're bringing a product that's owned by a corporation. There's people sit up there and say, "I'm your government. You know, I'm a politician. I do this and I do that." Yeah. It's really crazy, isn't it? So this is all part of the maritime law you were mentioning.
It is. I mean, it's all intrinsically connected, like everything else. But it's. Yeah, as you say, you know, the writing your name in capital letters, and this is why you have to do this on a form. You have to write, you know, they always say use block capital letters when you're filling out a form, and then you sign it, obviously with your normal signature. But it's those block capitals that actually denote you're not a living entity. You are just, as you say, you're just a... in effect, you're just a machine. You know, you're just part of their infrastructure, and that's how they can control you. If you asserted your rights as a living flesh and blood human being and just used non-capital letters, they couldn't exert their control over you. It would mean you'd be an outcast from society, of course, because you have to fulfill all these criteria before you actually, you know, such things as applying for driving license, passports, all that sort of stuff. It's all got to be done in this way. You couldn't actually apply as a living, breathing human being. You have to apply as this entity that they've created that represents you at birth, and that's how they control you. And again, it's bypassing common law. And it sat in trust for each and every one of us is a huge sum of money that they use themselves Okay, but I know that some people have actually gone through the process, and it's a very convoluted and complex process of actually divorcing themselves from this legal entity, this old block, you know, your name in old block capitals, and actually won or obtained the money that sits in trust for them, which otherwise you would never have access to, and which they obviously use themselves. So there's this vast fortune sat somewhere, God knows where, that is, you know, as I say, in trust for each and every one of us, and it's a huge sum of money. But if anyone actually finds out how to do that, and I certainly don't know how to do it, then please let me know, and I'll have a go myself.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Just it is. I mean, to anyone who's not come across all this stuff before, it's mind blowing. I mean, it sounds like I'm a crazy person. Well, maybe I am, but
That's
you know,
good.
you know what I'm saying? It's like, who is this guy? You know, what the hell is he talking about? It's just absolutely,
What the
it's
hell
now.
does this have to do with Kennedy?
Well, yeah, indeed. Well, yeah, but as we all know, it's a huge jigsaw puzzle, isn't it? And this is just one tiny little piece in the corner of
No,
the thing, you know. So,
that's right. It's a spider's web that they've created, haven't they? That's why it's just, I've done podcasts on this, but it's just so, I find it really hard to get my mind around all of this, especially if we're looking at money. You know, when someone goes in and they borrow money to get a mortgage for to buy a house, and how there isn't actually any money, and you know how they created this system, and the debt-based interest sort of system is really astonishing. It's actually I don't know what you would say it is. It's just evil.
It's fraudulent for a start. Yeah,
But it's
absolutely.
incredibly cunning, isn't it? It's
Yeah,
just the mindset
very.
behind it, and how they've done it. It really is, and sometimes it just you really it gives me a headache trying to get through it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've been doing this stuff for 20 years almost, and you know, at first things shock you, but eventually you sort of become numb to it all, and it just, well, nothing shocks you anymore. You just accept things, obviously after researching them. I mean, I just accept any old garbage, you know. But after doing the due diligence and the research, and you unearth information, you know, it can be shocking. But like I say, as time goes on, you realize that, well, nothing shocks me anymore, and really it doesn't. You know, you could basically tell me anything about what's going on in the world, and even if it's new information, and it wouldn't particularly shock me, because it would just say, oh yeah, well, that makes sense, that fits in with all the rest, you know, and that's how it goes.
It's exhausting as a human being trying to think, how am I going to get out of it? And then when you're a parent and you bring children into the world, and they create that birth certificate, and there's no use getting depressed about it.
No.
It's just people say, oh, you have to do this and you have to do that, but and a lot of things. But you know, when you get in trouble with the law, it's a serious thing, and it scares the hell out of people, you know? And they don't want to sort of try and go against the system in any way, so they just go along with it. But you can see so much in Australia, I mean, especially in regards to the police. You know, it's just they're just criminals, you know, in most regards. They're just raising money. The amount of fines in Australia, it's a complete nanny state in every sense of the word, an absolute nanny state. The fines that you get in this country, and the things that you can and you can't do, and the rules and the regulations, it's just nonsense. And you'd have to spend lifetimes trying to put it all together, or what, you know, the nanny state says that you're allowed to do and what you can't do. And it's just some of the things that the police have tickets for, and what they fine for, and you're talking about ridiculous amounts of money on hardworking people. Just feel like they've been so treated so unjustly in this system, and it's just a spider's web. And you wonder, can you ever get out of it? The system that they've created since back in the day. Have you been able to I'm just sort of trying to get some bullet points out of you just roughly because it's so deep, I know, so I apologize for that. But in regards, if we're looking at the head of the snake, you know, what would this be, do you think, John? Because, and if you, do we have sort of a timeline of this British crown where it would maybe originated from, do you think? Where this kind of, because there's an idea behind it, there's something pushing it. It began somewhere. Have you looked into that historical part of this British crown? And obviously, it's like a gang, and they've just gone right through history untouched.
Yeah, well, it began with the formation of the Bank of England in 1694.
Right,
that's what gave them the power and the money to be able to do it. Because, as I said before, central banks, and that was the second central bank in the world, was the Bank of England after the Bank of Amsterdam.
But the idea was the men who created that, the idea was already there, so they were already in discussions.
Yeah. And it was, you know, as I say, it was eventually taken over by the Rothschilds, and it was the Rothschilds that really, really moved things forward very quickly. Up until then, it had just been plodding along nicely for about a century until, like I say, the Rothschilds got involved, and then it really went crazy. But it was the fact that the Bank of England was formed in the first place, and the fact that they charged the loan money interest to the British government, which gave them the power and the wealth to be able to, you know, move their agenda forwards. So yeah, that was the start point of the Crown Empire, the formation of the Bank of England, and the formation of the Bank of England itself. I mean, I don't want to go into it now because it's a very convoluted story, but it's a very interesting story as well. And I've written about that in one of my other books, A Falsification of History, about how, you know, the Bank of England was formed, and it was all done through deception and all the rest of it. So again, it's an interesting story, but again, it's probably not relevant for our discussion today. But
I know. Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? And as I said at the start, Joel, you've written, it's not a big book, the JFK book. A book that you kind of fly through, but then it'll probably punch you in the face a few days after you've read it, and then you'll start telling people about it, and then you could have discussions for years after the book. And I think that's an incredible thing for a writer to do, you know, how you've compounded so much information in a book. So my idea was tonight is to try and sort of identify the game players, the idea behind all of this. And then talk a little bit about Kennedy himself. Mm-hmm. I was going to get you to just mention as well, and then we'll spend the last half an hour of the show, we'll talk about the Kennedy family a little bit, because it's just a great read in your book. But the Committee of 300, the crown, could you talk about some of these big players like Gore and Rockefeller, Greenspan, Kissinger, some of these names, like Bush, definitely stand out, but talk about that, the Committee of 300.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I mean, even though they're Americans, these guys that you just mentioned, those names, you know, they're all an intrinsic part of the Crown Empire because, as I've said, you know, at great length, the America has never become independent from Britain. You know, it's always been controlled from the City of London.
Wow, that's amazing.
So yeah, it's no surprise that these guys are on the list, because they are really big players in the world. You know, people like you mentioned, like Kissinger and the Bushes and Al Gore and all the rest of it. Obviously, Gore's the front man for the global warming scam, isn't he?
Kissinger, what a mongrel.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I mean,
these people as well, were involved in South America in the Chile dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet, and what they did to the Chilean people from about 1972 was horrific.
Like I say, everything is just absolutely intrinsically connected, and you follow the pyramids back, and it all ends up in the same place, you know, and that is the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, ad nauseum, you know, and people like Kissinger and Gore and the Bushes and, you know, the Mellon family, they're another one. They're
Rehberg.
All, you know, just, yeah, they're just the loyal lieutenants of these, you know, the senior players, basically. And governments are just an irrelevance. They're given government. These people are given government positions only because they are. It's like putting their placemen in there, you know, to make sure that things run how Mr. Rothschild wants things to be run. And you know, in a very small nutshell, that's it. You know, it's
they got the money, don't they? How do you think Americans are extremely patriotic? What would they think of this notion?
Oh, I mean, I've had some abuse about it, actually. You know, I've had one or two, shall we say, irate emails from our American cousins. But, you know, a lot of them, you know, any one of them who knows broadly what's going on in the world is, you know, like I was saying before, is not really surprised by it. But yeah, some do take an exception to it because, you know, like, as you say, they're fiercely patriotic, a lot of them. And, you know, it sort of, you know, they firmly believe what they were told. And that is that, you know, they won their independence from Britain in 1776. And, you know, that's the end of the story. But again, you know, it goes much, much, the rabbit hole goes a lot more deep than that as well, because, you know, the American Constitution was actually scrapped in 1871, which again, you know, most Americans, most people don't know about. And a new constitution was set up in all capital letters. Yeah, again, that phrase again, all capital letters. And basically, it's a fraud. The American Constitution is just a fraud, and it doesn't really protect anybody as it's supposed to do, which is no great surprise, knowing what we know about everything else. But there you go. It's just another little piece in the puzzle.
And a lot of people, and I myself, have looked into in this control system, this grid. The Vatican, the Jesuits. Would you pinpoint the Black Pope as well in all of this? Would you say that there is no real head of the snake, or would we be looking beyond, say, the crown to this area there, the Vatican, kind of Black Pope, Jesuits? Is this who's controlling things?
Well, I wouldn't say they're controlling things. Again, they're part of it. The bigger picture. But I don't think, you know, I just think they're another element to it, that's all. But I think, you know, it's the Crown Empire that is the big umbrella organization, and the Vatican and the Black Pope and all this, they're just, you know, adjuncts to that. They're not the prime movers in it by any stretch, I wouldn't say. And the Jesuits as well, and yeah, they're all involved.
We hear the Khazars, all these as well.
The Khazars, yeah,
Khazarian, and the Jews, all this.
I mean, everything is just part of this great, this huge umbrella organization, and you know, I'm not saying it's absolutely got everything tied up, because it obviously hasn't. There are things that escape its grip, but they're very few and far between, you know, whenever they do come across anything that's not within their control, they do their damnedest to try and bring it under their control. But yeah, it's a very many-headed snake. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I know, it's very hard to cover, isn't it? It's people have, you know, volumes and volumes and volumes of books on all this stuff, and
including
myself. I know, and I think people like to just listen to bullet points, and they're going to go out and read this book and get info, and a lot of people know more than any of us do, and know less, so it's a real mix, and it's worth going through. We could do the last part of the show on the Kennedy dynasty. You give a brief history, and it's a good one. I think you haven't gone too much into it in your book. You've really just nailed the most in important books. And you talk about the whole Kennedy curse as well. And I liked how you sort of said, well, you know, when you do bad things, then this sort of karma comes back to bite you on the ass, doesn't it? You really pinpointed, was it Ted Kennedy?
Ted Kennedy.
Ted Kennedy in this book. More than most, this was an astonishing man, wasn't it? I mean, you would hope that a guy like this is maybe in some hellish place, but the Kennedys have this squeaky clean image, but this was anything but, wasn't it?
Ted, do you mean the father, Joe?
The one you talk about?
The
your book
brother
with,
of JFK, yeah.
Yeah, the banker, and then he got into all the groups bring in all the alcohol, and that, what an incredible story! It's like a movie, isn't it? This guy's life.
Yeah, I mean Joe was a very interesting guy, an evil guy, but an interesting guy. Fingers in lots of different pies. He was involved with the Prohibition era. You know, he was involved with the importation of alcohol into the States and into Canada, because, of course, Canada had Prohibition at the same time as well, but not for quite as long, I think, as the States. But, yeah, so there was – and then once the Prohibition had finished in Canada, there was a lot of booze coming into the States from, you know, across the border from Canada. And Joe was very, very instrumental in that. And he made an absolute fortune out of trafficking illegal booze, yeah. And he was also involved in the film industry as well, the fledgling film industry in the 1920s. He owned a chain of cinemas. He owned, he owned the production company as well. I can't remember the name of it now, but I'm pretty sure I wrote it in my book what it is, but I can't remember which particular one it was. So he had access to all these movie starlets, you know, who were desperate for fame and fortune. And so he basically had his pick of all those as well. And very much like his son, JFK, he had multiple liaisons, shall we say, with beautiful young women, and I'm sure he had a very nice life. It's good work if you can get it, isn't it, really? But
it was incredible, about his banking, what he did in regards to that, and the engineered banking collapses, how they made money off so much suffering, and these kind of depressions in the US, and these people were so extraordinarily wealthy when people were down to the skin and bones, you know?
Oh, yeah. Again, he was involved. He was involved in the Wall Street crash, which was obviously, as most people sort of aware of these things know, that it was totally engineered. It wasn't a natural phenomenon by any stretch of the imagination. And he was involved in that. He sold all his stocks and shares the week before the crash, for example. So they knew it was going to happen because, you know, they planned it. So, and then, of course, after the crash happens, they then go back and buy up all the stocks and shares again at a ridiculously knockdown price and make millions, if not billions, out of it. And that's the way these people operate. They've been doing it all through history. You know, the Rothschilds did that in the very early 19th century. And, it's just the sort of thing that goes on. So, yeah, Joe Kennedy was a man of many hats, and he certainly made a lot of money through very dubious business practices.
All controlled by the Crown as well.
Yeah, of course.
Engineered by them because they had their guys on the ground doing all the work.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, he was, I wouldn't say he was an actual integral part of the Crown Empire, but he was certainly on the fringes of it. I mean, he would have had contacts with those people who were deeply entrenched in it, but I don't think he specifically was an actual agent of the Crown, but very close to one. I think it's also worth mentioning the connection to Aristotle and Onassis as well, a name which a lot of people may have heard of, because Jackie Kennedy, JFK's widow, actually married Aristotle Onassis, who was a Greek shipping magnate, after JFK's death. Now, Onassis was a very, very big player in the Crown. He was involved up to his neck in, he had a big, huge shipping empire, but he used that shipping empire for the transportation of massive amounts of drugs, which again, all the drug trafficking in the world is controlled by the British Crown. Shock horror. Maybe not surprising to some, but probably very surprising to a lot. And Onassis was a very big player in it, and it was even, it was stated that he was the guy you picked American presidents, and it wouldn't surprise me, because we all know that these politicians are selected, not elected. And Onassis was instrumental in choosing JFK as president through the machinations of Joe, because Joe was big buddies with Onassis and they worked very closely together. And it was Onassis that had the final say as to who would be president. The Nixon-Kennedy election in 1960 was the closest ever in terms of results. But again, there was shenanigans going on the vote count there, as well as there was in the 2000 Bush election with Gore as well. A lot of people know that you know there was a lot of fraudulent vote counting going on in that election. Well, it was the same in the Nixon Kennedy one, and apparently Nixon didn't complain too much because he was promised the presidency later, which of course happened. You know, so he just made a few cursory complaints about this vote rigging, and that was the end of that. So yeah, all connected, all very dubious stuff, but it's what's gone on forever.
What's the curse behind this Kennedy family, John, you think? What's going on there?
I honestly don't know. I just,
crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I just said it was karma, but I suppose it's a case of they'll live by the sword, die by the sword. You know, it's, you know, that a lot of instances of you know, that, well, obviously JFK and RFK, his brother, were assassinated. So, you know, it's not sort of accidental, is it? You know, and then there was a situation with the younger brother, Teddy, Edward, and the Chappaquiddick incident, which people may have heard of, whereby he left a young woman to die. His car crashed into a river or to the water between an island and the mainland, and he just left the car, left her to die in the car, and it was rumoured that she was pregnant with his child, and the effect of that was that he never got to stand for president, which was going to be the plan, but how much of that was engineered, I don't know, but the rumours are that it was the Bush family that were involved, and they wanted an end to the Kennedy dynasty to begin their own, which actually happened. And again, Bush Senior was really heavily involved in the Kennedy assassination as well. You know, he was actually in Dallas when it happened, but he denied it. He said he couldn't remember where he was when Kennedy was killed. I mean, who cannot remember where they were when Kennedy was killed? Those of others that were alive at the time, you know. I was a schoolboy, but I still remember when I heard the news. Quite shocking. So
traitorous murderers. Bushes, and then they ran America, and they're treated like royalty over there. It's astonishing to see.
And the senior Bush's father, again, for those who don't know, Prescott Bush, he was involved in financing the Nazis during World War II. So, you know, there you go. That's what I mean. It's all wheels within wheels. Everything's connected. Nothing is as it seems. You know, the world is a very different place to what people imagine it to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was. And what's a little timeline, John, of the political aspirations of the Kennedys? How many were there that wanted to take the stage politically? There was a whole bunch, wasn't there?
Yeah. Well, if you go back to Joe's father, in other words, JFK's grandfather, he was the mayor of Boston, I believe.
They were,
from memory.
Yeah.
So that's where the political element came from originally.
In and the then, family, of course, right.
Yeah, Joe became a congressman or a senator. He did quite well in politics, and then he became the ambassador to Britain during World War II. And it was really the eldest son, Joe Jr., JFK's older brother, who was earmarked for president through Joe's machinations. But unfortunately, what happened was, actually, it's a strange little story, but JFK was in the US Navy during World War II, and he became a hero through this PT-109 incident. He was commander of this little torpedo boat, and it's all very blown up out of proportion, but apparently he was made out to be the all-American hero due to this incident with the Japanese, and so he became this war hero. And now the elder brother, Joseph Joe Jr., who was earmarked for president, felt a bit as though his nose was put out of joint by this, because they were a very competitive family as well, even amongst the siblings. And so Joe volunteered for what turned out to be a suicide mission, and he was killed. So that's when the focus then shifted onto JFK, and Joe Senior, you know, pushed JFK forward through an assist to become president, rather than his son who'd tragically been killed. Yeah, and then of course Bobby was heavily involved in politics. He was going to be president when Nixon became president, because he was, you know, it was looking very, very much like he was going to win the nomination and win the presidency even. And then of course he was assassinated too. So
that's right.
So that was that. And then again, I mentioned Edward, who was also a senator, and again earmarked for president. And then the Chappaquiddick incident finished that as well. So, yeah, it's all been, as you say, a bit of a curse, all very tragic. But how much of it is engineered and how much of it was accidental, we'll never know, probably.
And the assassinations, I guess these kind of events are still going on today, you know, shootings and events, you know, I mean, it never ends, distracting the public.
Yeah.
Going on back then as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah, there was, I don't know, it seemed like as even before JFK came into power, as we're talking about now, there was the aspirations were there, weren't they? As you mentioned, it started back, and there was that momentum building with the Kennedy clan that must have, as you say, through the book, it gets more and more powerful until the point where JFK gets elected and becomes the president of the United States. Obviously, there was that threat there as well, or something not right along the lines there, with all this going on, these assassinations and stuff. It's really crazy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's hard to sort of pinpoint, though, because it's really confusing, because you're looking at the Crown being involved in these Kennedys earlier that we're mentioning, and all this stuff going on with them, and then then it seems like with JFK, he's going against them, but it's a complex issue.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, and it confuses the hell out of people, I think.
But it does. I mean, it's a very, you know, the whole world situation is extremely complex, and you know, even though I'm a professional geopolitical researcher, it sounds very grand, but it just means that I look into all this stuff. You know, I do it on a full-time basis, you know, as well as writing, and you know, even for someone doing it full time, it's mind blowing. You can't always get to the bottom of everything, because it is so complicated, so complex and convoluted. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's you definitely get that vision of that threat though in the book, and I didn't know a few things that you were mentioning there about Gaddafi and Libya, you know, wanted to do and what he did for his people as well. And of course in the West he was demonized. You know, he's just an evil Arab that needs to be exterminated, and the big boys are going to go over there and do the job for us, and we can all shout on our rooftops. But yeah, really disgusting and humiliating for Libya and himself, and you can see how they exterminate these threats. But JFK is a big one. What do you think about him? Do you think he was compromised in any way, or he was the real deal? Was he tormented as a man? Have you been able to look into that at all? What he really wanted for the country? You hear that a little bit about maybe Hitler and things like that. You maybe think maybe these guys were engineered and put there, and maybe they had a turn of events and they went against the Crown or something like that.
Sure.
It's hard to pinpoint.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, basically what happened, Kennedy was always a very independent guy, you know, right from being a child. He was very, very resolute, very very competitive, very independent-minded, as I say. And he grew up in that manner. But unfortunately for him, he had his father, who was, you know, who kept him under strict control. He, you know, he was scared of his father. His father was a very, very dominating, nasty man, really. And JFK was sort of beholden to him. So when he had this stroke in 61, which was, you know, a few months after JFK was elected, it really gave both John, JFK, and Bobby the green light to basically do what they really wanted to do, as opposed to what they wanted to do but couldn't do. So yeah, I mean, they did things like, you know, he started basically cleaning up the American political scene, which obviously didn't go down that well. They upset, as I say, many, many different elements of the of the American establishment and hierarchy. They upset people in, you know, they upset Hoover, who was the head of the FBI. Hoover absolutely hated them because for what they were trying to do, you know, with all the reforms and things like that. Kennedy threatened to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces, you know, so that didn't go down very well in CIA. They upset big oil, you know, the big oil industry in Texas. As I said before, they upset the Federal Reserve people.
What about Vietnam, John? With Vietnam, was Kennedy, there was some things there, wasn't there? Trouble with Vietnam?
Yeah.
He wanted to pull out, or?
Yeah, he was not in favour of the Vietnam War at all. And it was being pushed into it against his will.
It was planned.
So again, something else.
Yeah. Sorry? It was planned. The Vietnam War, yeah, and then he was obviously causing some issues. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but yeah, he was dragging his heels on that, so that was another good reason. Him and LBJ, who was his Lyndon Johnson, who was his vice president, absolutely detested the sight of each other, and Johnson was very powerful in Jewish circles, and also. Kennedy seriously upset the Israeli hierarchy as well, of which LBJ was absolutely intrinsically connected to. The way that Kennedy upset the Israelis was they've been building these nuclear plants in the desert in Israel, a place called Dimona. And he absolutely insisted that the US be able to inspect them. A bit like the Iraqi war proceedings earlier this century, and the Israelis refused point blank, you know, and he insulted them by doing various things that really upset them, and so of course they were out to get him as well. So there's all these different elements, you know. Anassis was as soon as Kennedy lost his controlling influence with his father Joe, Anassis was on his back as well. He upset the mafia. He was trying to destroy the mafia. And again, you know, as crazy as it sounds, the mafia is all part of the British Crown Empire as well.
And the CIA, military, FBI, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, he wanted
CIA,
to smash
FBI,
it out.
Said Big Oil. He upset Big Oil by actually taking away one of the big privileges that industry had, and that was something called the oil depletion allowance, which made the search for oil very lucrative indeed. Because if you did five drillings, say, and only one of them produced any oil, you still made a profit because of this oil depletion allowance. But by taking that away, which is what Kennedy did, it vastly reduced their profitability. So he was again, he was persona non grata with the big oil industry as well. There were so many people that he upset, and each one of these entities that he upset are all part of the British Crown, and this is where the story comes into play. And so it was just an accumulation of all these many, many different elements of the establishment that it upset that concluded with his assassination. And obviously it didn't take place in the way that, you know, we're told it did. There was, you know, lots of very shady characters involved there. And again, it all gets very convoluted. And I talk a little bit about in the book about, and I don't go overboard with it, but the two Oswalds situation. Did you get to that bit in the book, Adam?
Not at the back of the book, that bit yet. Yeah, getting there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll just briefly talk about that as well. Apparently, there were two Oswalds, and it was done to create a diversion. There was Lee Oswald and there was Harvey Oswald, and they were two completely different people, and they looked not like twins, but they looked very, very similar, because there was lots of incidents where people said that they'd seen Oswald in one place when it's proven that he was actually in another place, and it wasn't just sort of a one-off that. There was lots of different ones, and we know that there are two separate Oswald, and they were both. Then this is the really mind-blowing bit. They were both brought up independently of each other, but with the same purpose in mind, to use them in some kind of subterfuge at some later date. And in fact, before Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, the original plan was to do it in Chicago 3 weeks earlier, when he was in Chicago. And they'd also got another pair of dupes lined up to do that, a completely different pair. They were being brought up in exactly the same way, with the same names and lookalikes, and again, it's all done to cause confusion. But apparently, this is a common thing that the CIA does, is to create these pairs of lookalike and named alike people, who they use to cause confusion in the event of false flag operations, which obviously the Kennedy assassination was a false flag in a sense, because it wasn't performed by the people that it was stated to have been performed by. So yeah, it's all very convoluted, isn't it? And
Yeah,
it's all
Port
covered in
Arthur,
the book.
anyone?
Sorry?
Oh, just it matches Port Arthur, Tasmanian shooting as well.
Oh
There was another
yeah.
Martin Bryant with a with a blonde hair, yeah, that looked like him that was going around. Yeah, they do it all the time. They're still doing it
Yeah.
today, John.
It's obviously a common practice then, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah,
But mind blowing. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if it was meant to take place in another place, it was very heavily planned, and the shooting itself, John. Your thoughts on this one? I've seen videos where it looks like the driver's turning around and shooting him, and all
Yeah.
of this. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely think the driver was involved.
That's a serious headshot.
Yeah, exactly.
Close range.
And it was definitely from the front, because it blew the back of his head out. If it had been from the back, it would have been the front of his head that had been blown out.
What's your conclusions on
In what sense? I mean,
it
such a
all?
big
On the
cop.
actual shooter.
Oh, the actual shooter. Yeah, I think the driver was,
Oh,
you know,
wow.
was the death shooter, without a doubt.
So
Yeah,
you've
yeah.
seen those videos where he quickly turns and
I have,
yeah.
and I've put some stills from the videos in the book as well. So they probably don't show up that well in Kindle, because Kindle's not great for pictures. But certainly in the paperback, the pictures are a lot clearer, of the driver turning round, and So yeah, it's and then of course all the there was all the aftermath. The cover up afterwards was huge. I mean, it was absolutely immense. Yes, did you know something like 250 people were silenced afterwards in various ways over the course of the next few years? And I sort of, not in great detail, but I briefly list those and what happened to them.
Jeez.
It's just incredible. It's just incredible. And then people have said to me, well, why would they go to all that trouble? Why wouldn't they just shoot him in somewhere else, or just poison his food, or just blah, 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 whatever? And I say, well, the reason for that is because these people are ritualistic by nature, and they there's a Freemasonic ritual that is called the Killing of the King. And that's how they did it. And that's how they did it with Abraham Lincoln as well. The parallels between the two, and the aftermath and the cover-up, are very, very similar. And yeah, they did it to show the world that they're not going to be messed with, and as a warning to any future president that, this is not how things work. You don't do things like this. you know, we're in control, not you. So it was a very public ritual execution for that reason.
Yeah.
Otherwise, as I said before, they could have easily, they could, I mean, if they wanted to, they could have just impeached him for all his sexual shenanigans, you know, because it was, you know, it was obvious what was happening. He was screwing everything that moved, basically, at one point. And, you know, so he could easily have been impeached through that and or disgraced in another way. You know, they could have faked some tax fraud or, you know, I'm just thinking of things off the top of my head here. But there was absolutely no need to go to all that trouble unless you wanted it to be a ritualistic assassination, a ritualistic murder. So that's what they did.
Yeah, it's similar to Diana as well, wasn't it? It seemed very ritualistic, but it also, to me, seems like creates trauma. Trauma sort of based mind control, like 9/11 did. Definitely. It just gets into the subconscious of the masses, and they never forget it. And it's that horror, isn't it? Mm.
Well, exactly. Fear. I mean, America was traumatized for years after.
Oh, my God,
I mean,
you still are today. That's a horrifying video.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they create all the time, horror, you know, to keep the masses down and, you know, sick enough. So we just keep working, but we don't keel over, you know.
Exactly.
But that was, that would have just, I mean, that's just shocking what they did to him. As you said, it wasn't needed, but it was just brutal. And that's ritualistic. Yeah, that's a sacrifice in front of the planet. Mm.
Yeah, like I say, the ritual is called, in Masonic circles, that ritual is called the killing of the king.
God, and if that's true, John, with the driver shooting him like that, that's a bold move, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean would you think you were going to get away with that? It's, exactly. Yeah, I understand a sniper sort of thing, but they created that diversion because the sniper, Lee Harvey, was up there and he shot him from there, and no one's thinking of the driver, but very bold, very ballsy and gutsy and just in your face. I guess they didn't have the technology and the know-how that we do now. They use a little more trickery and everything now. And you know, we saw what happened in New Zealand, how it's all like point of view video game killing now. You know, because the public and children are being so desensitized to violence, so they sort of see that and say, yeah, that looks like a video game I played there and whatever. And and it's so confusing now with these false flag events. You don't know if people are really being killed or whatever, but that was such a brutal display. And as you said, that's exactly right. I feel like that's the same with 9/11. It was like, this is what we can do. You know, those buildings disappear. Exactly. This, your president, we're going to blow his head off. This is what happens if you don't do what we say.
Exactly. Hey, it's almost like laughing at us, isn't it? You know, saying, you know, this is what we're going to do, and you won't have a clue that we've done it, basically. Yeah.
So
just on a, as you were talking, and I was just thinking about, just to sort of lighten the mood a little, one of my favorite comedians, sadly dead now, a guy called Bill Hicks, an American guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Yeah, of course.
But he had some really funny things to say about the Kennedy assassination. It was one of his, you know, his topics that he used to talk about a lot. And one of the things that he said, and I think I've actually put the transcript of this in the book. I think I have. I can't remember exactly, but I think I did. And he said something really that I thought was really clever and funny. He said, you know, when American presidents first elected, he says, I'm sure what happens is they're taken down into this smoky room in the basement of the White House, and there's this big industrialist guy with a big cigar stood there, and he says, roll the film, and the lights go down and the film comes on, and it's a very scratchy, grainy film, and it's a film of the Kennedy assassination from an angle that nobody's ever seen before. And then, you know, the film ends and the lights go on, and the guy comes back out and says, any questions, Mr. President?
Cool.
I just thought, yeah, that's probably true, isn't it? You know, they just show them this just to remind them what happens if they step our line.
That's right. Yeah. The smoking man. Yeah. I know. You're right. Yeah, that's right. And, well, I guess most governments today fall into line. And we've seen what happened. If you don't, they finally got their fangs into Venezuela. very rich oil country. I mean, where's left, John? Where's left? Not under this rule, really. I mean, to be honest, what do we have left, really, in the world? It's all under their command.
Well, the Rothschilds own every
Everything.
single central bank in the world except for
It's just.
three, is it? Cuba, Syria, and Iran. And what does that tell you
Yeah, and we know
about
about
what's going on?
Iran.
Yeah, Syria and Iran. So that those are the places that they've targeted, aren't they?
That's
Because
it. Yeah, that's right.
the military are just mercenaries for the banking system,
That's
basically.
right.
That's all it is.
Yeah, and the mercenaries, yeah, the militaries, they've just been set up to protect these people as well. That's all it's about. Yeah, and you think about the printed press. The TV and cable stations, the entertainment, sex, everything that we view, everything that's around us, everything that we do, everything that we breathe, is controlled in some way, shape, or form, by this empire, and which you're pinpointing goes back to the crown. It's some that's a small area, John, that you're talking about there for so much power, isn't it? It's hard to fathom. It's you're part of the world. It's such a unique, wonderful part of the world as well. England. I wonder if we'll ever see an end to it, to this control, this black
I don't.
heart, you
Probably not in my lifetime,
know.
Adam. I'm sad to say, but one day we can but hope, can't we? That the word has got out, and the 100th monkey syndrome kicks in, which is the point where everybody becomes aware of exactly what's going on and says, we're not going to stand for it anymore.
It's yeah, that's right. And I guess with your book, it kind of reminds me of an old murder mystery. In if we're looking at JFK, because people probably would need to understand that he pissed off a lot of people in high places, who had a
Absolutely.
lot of money at their disposal. So it's kind of like that murder mystery thing where around the dinner table, isn't it? Where you're
Yeah,
thinking,
it
who
was.
murdered the guy? But
Well, it was all of
that's
them.
right. Yeah, and funded through the crown, obviously, and all of that, and they got what they wanted. And I guess America wasn't the same after he went. As you said in your book, he was the last kind of president that wasn't under the boot of Israel as well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah, he was.
so we've got Trump today. What's your quick ideas on Mr. Donald Trump under the thumb as well? Or he seems to
Oh,
be,
absolutely.
yeah, like he's giving the impression that he's pissing people off as well in China and all of this, and he's doing what he can for America, but is it all a show, John?
Of course it is. It's just another Israeli pawn, basically. He's no different to any of the others, and why would he be? He was elected in the same way that all the others are, fraudulently. So, they just decide which one of them is going to be president, and that's the way it goes. Yeah, they all have their own little individual idiosyncrasies and foibles and the way that they work, so that they all appear to be slightly different, but they're not really. Trump upsets a lot of people, is very brash and very opinionated, but at the end of the day, it just follows the same agenda that anybody else would have done had they been in his position. So, all this business about, Trump out and all that. Well, yeah, fine, get him out, but who's he going to be replaced by?
That's
Just
right.
another Rothschild clone, basically.
I guess you start to feel like, as you know, a lot of people do, I don't like the term, but they do become more aware or wake up to what's going on around them, and they do sincerely want change. And people don't like the system around them that's been built around them. Their mindset starts to change, and I think this system that's ruling things, it needs to shape shift and change itself to accommodate the people and keep them under control. So, in a lot of ways, it presents them with what they want in Trump, and he appears to do all these things for the public, and he's their guy, but really the system continues behind him, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah, well, great talking with you, John. I think we did some, you know, we covered a lot of interesting points and great bullet points, and we obviously want people to buy your book. That's JFK, A Very British Coup, The Definitive Truth of the Assassination. And you can get that from amazon.co.uk. You can go to John's website. It's a fantastic website, The Falsification of History. You haven't been up there too much. Your last post, John, was on February 2019th. A post called Dear Abby, but if people want to look at a lot of historical moments and a lot of great information that's on that website, you're still going to keep putting stuff up on your website?
I am. As I explained to you up there, Adam, I've been so busy last 6 months, it's just been untrue. I mean, first of all, I was writing the Kennedy book, which I wrote in about 6 weeks, but having said that, I'd done a lot of the work a few years earlier. And then as soon as I finished that and got that published, I worked on my next book, or one of my next books, called Falsification of Science. I've actually shelved that now because I'm doing something even more important. I'm writing a book with my friend Shannon in America about the 5G situation and how that links into the transhumanism agenda, which is a really important work. And I believe that could be my number one opus, if you like.
And Magnus opus.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. And so that is really important. So that's why I've temporarily shelved Falsification of Science to actually get that underway. And, we're both working on that like beavers as I speak. So I just really haven't been on Twitter for months. I haven't been on my website for months. I'm literally every spare waking moment, I am either researching this new book or writing it. So that's underway. Hopefully it should be ready for publication sometime in the early new year, I hope. But we'll just have to see how that goes.
You are falling down a digital rabbit hole there with 5G. I think you will be.
It's mind blowing.
It's shocking, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What they've unleashed onto us, onto human beings. Yeah.
Yes. It's dreadful. It's dreadful. But I mean, the big thing about that is not just how dangerous it is to human health, but that also the way that it's just part of this agenda that is all linked into the transhumanism agenda, and the EMF radiation generated by 5G actually facilitates us. I know this probably sounds crazy to most people, but it actually facilitates the transformation of us into part robots. And again, you'll have to wait for my book to get all the good gen on that. It's absolutely staggering. It really is.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yep.
Terrifying.
Yeah, no, we're being prepped. We're being prepped and turned into this. It is. Well,
yeah.
I wish you didn't have to write these books, man.
So do I.
I wish you could sit and write nice books about tropical islands and where to visit.
And bunny rabbits.
Yeah, and fairy floss and carnivals.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Oh my goodness, John. We just have to. We're here to learn, and we have to keep breaking this down and following it and doing our best. So that's what you're doing. Thank God. Great work, man, and can't wait for that. I'll definitely be chatting with you about that. So anything you want to add before we plug out? Any way people can support you or any other links?
By all means, just go on Amazon and search my name, John Hamer, Hamer, and you'll come across my books. And also, as Adam kindly pointed out, my website is falsificationofhistory.co.uk. I'm not in this for the money. I don't want you to spend money particularly, but I just want to get that information out there. And if anybody's interested in anything, absolutely anything that I have to say, then please read more, both on my website and in my books, and that's it really.
And people can contact you directly through your website as well.
Yeah, my email address is on my website, so if anybody wants to contact me personally, I don't mind that at all. In fact, I welcome it. Yeah, I do have lots of people around the world that email me, and I enjoy the discourse that we have mostly. You know, I do get some abuse, which is to be expected, but hey ho.
That's right. Great speaking to you tonight, John. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
A lot of great listeners out there that to love these podcasts and love our work. So just another great podcast to add to the pile, and hope people go out and grab that book because there's so much more in it. You know, we just give them a taste tonight, but you really need to get that book on JFK and read it. It's a great read. You can't put it down. And I love learning about this because you don't learn about this in any schools or any universities. You don't learn about this anywhere. You're just spoon-fed a whole nother reality. So I love these kinds of books and learning myself because I'm just learning myself here, John, and going along with
we're
that.
All
so I'm surprised how little I know, and and I'm fascinated, and I learned so much already from this book. It's an amazing history. So great work. Big
thank
book.
You.
So thanks for putting out that work and speaking with me tonight. And we'll keep in contact and chat again sometime soon. Absolutely.
That'd be great. Look forward to it, Adam. Thanks very much indeed. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, buddy. Take care, okay?
Bye-bye.